Welcome to the Tech Vittori podcast, where we will explore the hottest topics in connectivity and digitalization with some of the industry's leading minds.
So now let's align industry, research, and public understanding of innovation, which the last one probably is the toughest thing to do, where we all know what to do, how would be the best. We are talking between science, industry, and policy makers. That's what we are going to do now also. Then there will be panelists' views on partnerships across different sectors, how it's done already and what should be done better, and what general public needs, or maybe what general public thinks it needs. So let's talk about that, and not only that. Moderator is Will Townsend, our good old friend. So welcome back, Vice President and Principal Analyst at Moore Insights and Strategy. Welcome with a round of applause, please.
Thank you, thank you. Is my mic on? Can everyone hear me? Okay, perfect. So thank you. As you can tell, I am not from Riga. I am from Texas. So this is my fifth Tech Vittori. And so I'm pleased to be moderating this panel. Before we get started, though, I'd like each of our panelists to introduce themselves. So let's start with you, my friend.
Anders Ansbox. I'm a director of Institute of Solid State Physics, which is can be called a deep science for deep tech.
Thank you, Anders. Mart?
Yeah, thanks, Mart from Enterprise Estonia. I lead the applied research department there, which pushes private sector R&D in several ways, and the team is put together so that each of us has a research background in some technology, mine's biotech, and then each of us has private sector R&D hands-on experience. So that's why we think that with this type of expertise you can actually talk with companies in a meaningful way and help them in whatever way they need.
Thanks. Laura?
Laura Stravalde. Good afternoon. Investment and Development Agency of Latvia. So today I'm with the head of investment promotion, since our agency is responsible also for export, bringing in investment and EU funding, but today more on bringing investment to Latvia.
Great. Vitaly?
I am Vitaly Skrivelis. I'm founder and co-owner of pharmaceutical company PharmIdea here in Latvia. We develop, manufacture, and export sterile injectable drugs for hospitals to 60 countries approximately.
Great. And last but not least, Alina.
Hi, my name is Alina, and I'm representative of European Institute of Innovation and Technology in Latvia. And I'm also working with Riga Technical University Science and Innovation Center. And maybe for those who are not familiar with the institute, EAT was set in 2008 as an independent European body, but also integral part of the Horizon Europe program, after the realization that despite the excellent research and infrastructure in Europe, a few of research findings are turned into the products or services that would definitely be needed to improving our public well-being, security, and also the economic development of the continent. So EAT is currently the largest innovation partnership network in Europe, with more than 2,000 partners and place-based representations in each country as hubs. And so in Latvia, we are also representing almost 6 out of 9 of those communities, knowledge and innovation communities. So yes, my role is to foster and the access to this EAT funding mechanisms foster collaboration of Latvia with the institute.
Thank you, Alina. This is a fascinating subject for me. It's almost at times, I think, a mystery to a lot of people to understand the link between research that drives innovation, that drives economic gain and monetization, or whatever you want to call it. And that's what we're going to talk about today. And there are a lot of challenges that go along the way. in the last panel, there was a point made around many times research just ends and nothing comes of it. And that's part of the process. But what I'd like to start out with to begin the conversation is to get each of your opinion on what are some of the challenges that exist in linking and kind of, you know, having that value chain be created, you know, in the process. So Vitaly, maybe we'll start with you. What are some of the challenges that you see in linking these elements together?
What entrepreneurs, who they are and how they perceive the scientists. We are people who are running for profit. Behind this profit, which is even the same important, we have a fear to lose it. Mm-hmm. Therefore, we're running, we're keeping our cash cows in companies, and not so often relaxed for new things. Scientists, we recognize as people who are driven by curiosity. Mm-hmm. How to connect these two absolutely different universes? Mm-hmm. And my answer is to talk. Why? And talk rather often, because when we have to talk to scientists, then we have to stop to think as a company or as a management of company, to think a little bit ahead. And then if we learn about exciting and curious things what scientists discover and develop, that brings to us also more positive thoughts to take a risk for new things. Therefore, I could say that create any different format when entrepreneurs are talking with scientists face to face, not distantly, not via papers.
Sure. Laura, I bet you have a different perspective on this given your focus with the investment side of things.
Yes, well, the Ministry of Economy published a Latvian growth strategy for the next 10 years with the aim to double economy, and clearly stating that how we could reach that is significantly increasing the productivity of Latvian companies. Mm-hmm. So how to do that? And when we joined EU, our economy and the growth perspective and expectations of that growth was solely based on the EU funding, basically. And thus, a solid investment environment was not created in Latvia. And now we do see that to really change the structure of our economy towards high value added, innovative economy where innovative products are being developed, produced, and exported. In the end, we do need that foreign investment as a small country. Mm-hmm. We cannot solely rely on EU funding, although it's a very important influx of support from EU. But foreign investment is not only about money. It does bring the necessary influx of investment, but also brings the knowledge transfer. But of course, it's easy to say, but not so easy to actually do that. But there is a lot of work ahead of us. And now we do see, especially for this government, that the importance on political level for mm-hmm. bringing new investment to support our economy and those very ambitious targets to double the economy, it is on politicians' tables currently. So that's a good sign, and from the agency's perspective, we are on the right path.
Sure. From my perspective, sort of a best practice is when you bring private and public together, right?
Yeah.
In cooperation. And Mart, we had a great conversation yesterday. We were talking about the differences between, with Alina, the differences between Latvia and Estonia. From an Estonian perspective, you're famous for Skype. That has drawn a lot of venture capital. into the country. And so your challenge isn't necessarily funding, but it's more or less coordinating activities, right? So what's your perspective on what you've learned in Estonia?
Yeah, well, I believe that, well, you can always say that you need more money, and probably that's true. But sure. I have a feeling that at least in Estonia, with the European funding, with the private sector funding, with the public funding from the government side, if you have a decent enough idea, you will get the funding. Mm-hmm. The challenge is that so far Estonia has, well, distributed the money to basically whoever wants it and has developed services from the public sector side that are a bit generic, like innovation training and these type of things. But in our view, you should focus on, Estonia as a small country, should focus on some of the sectors, whether it's defense, smart defense, whether it's biomass, biorefining, or cybersecurity or whatever. And then it needs to create a sort of a 360 degree approach dedicated to that specific sector. Let me give you an example. You come from the pharma industry. Obviously, you deal with medical agencies, certifications, all that things. And you expect those processes to be quick. Estonia, it's not too bad, could be better. But say Estonia decides, okay, I don't see any point in pharma industry. Then there's no point in putting effort into these sectors, specifically to streamline this, if the rest, if the Estonia says pharma industry is not important. If it says it's important, then the whole process from education to research to financiation, to export support, to certification, all that needs to be streamlined to support that specific industry. And I believe in this way, you can take the whole value chain approach, and then you can actually make a meaningful difference to the economy.
That makes a lot of sense. And Alina, we were talking yesterday as well, and you know, Laura spoke to the funding. I know that's part of your focus as well, but you and I were discussing how sort of the nature of what's happening in Latvia is somewhat disaggregated, and there's a need for driving accountability, I think, within the process. So any thoughts there?
Yeah, maybe I can be more on the practical side here and bring the attention back to the funding gap as one of the challenges that we are facing. Mm-hmm. And specifically the funding gap in early stage deep tech innovation support, and specifically in this so-called valley of death that the proof of concept or TRL4 mm-hmm. Spin-offs from the academia, from the research side are facing. And here I do not only believe that we need to secure more funding support from the government, because otherwise, like despite R&D efforts being quite well funded, we're losing all this value in inability to convert it into the real products and services. And also adjusting the current support programs, because some specific examples show that there are programs which require either additional co-funding from the very beginning, or they require pre-financing, or they do not support the salaries for researchers setting up the startup, mm-hmm. which sets a very big limitation, unfortunately. And specifically, if we talk about science-backed innovations that could show the great value, the research project is ending, and then the researcher has no more support within the project. So if we motivate them to start the business, to start the spin-off mm-hmm. efforts, they somehow need to be compensated. Mm-hmm. They need additional funding. Yeah, and unfortunately, in current programs, there is no such opportunity to cover that. Mm-hmm. So this funding gap definitely is one of the issues, and also for sure that has already been highlighted the collaboration between industry and researchers. And this is what the EAT programs, they have different support mechanisms, let's say, from the entrepreneurial capacity building to innovation project support, but already on the market readiness stage. Mm-hmm. So still there is a gap. And even to apply for these EAT programs, let's say at TRL 6, to get to de-risk the funds of industry, mm-hmm. you still need a 30% of co-funding. Mm-hmm. So that's the question, like where, who would risk that? Either right. it should be the government who can support in that, or the industry who are willing to take risks.
It's a challenge, right? And Andres, you know, I purposely wanted you to close this conversation because you're coming from the research angle. So what is your perspective as a researcher on what we've discussed as a panel?
Well, I think that the talking is really a kind of key because, as Vitaly smartly noted, there are two cultures. And in order to make two cultures to cooperate, like also you said, the industry and research should cooperate more, you should find a kind of common language. Mm-hmm. And talking is important, and talking not just like a campaign, but in long term. If we really want to develop something, we should do it in a long term. The second thing is that after research projects, usually there are at least one, in some cases, bunch of amazing ideas which you want to test, which can be a products or technologies, but you know, the thing is, these things most probably will fail, mm-hmm. but nobody knows it. Nobody knows.
What's the statistic, like a new business fails within 90% of the time within the first 2 years? It's an incredibly high bar, right? Just to be successful.
And that's why the Death Valley exists, because when you cross it, then you have a lot of opportunities of funding again. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, which means that, again, you need to have a kind of funding available, like said, and which funds you this crossover testing, but not in a research manner, but how it is done, for example, in pre-accelerators. Mm-hmm. It's like in a small iteration steps, you test it. Is it still feasible? Like you have a market benchmarks? Can you reach them? No? Oh, forget it.
Sure.
That's not innovation.
Right.
There might be a lot of amazing research under it, but and it takes time, you know, and if the researchers have a confidence that they will have a funding for such a things, these things will start to grow. But in order for them to find out whether which are the market benchmarks, you should talk to industry. Mm-hmm. And what also I understand that industry sometimes lacks a contraperson in a research to discuss something they need. Which means that the other dimension of this dialogue is that industry should state very clearly what kind of competencies it searches in a research. Mm-hmm. And developing such a competencies takes time. Even if you start to discuss with some university, you know, it's 3-5 years unless you develop really on a
sure.
needed level.
Well, we've talked about a lot of challenges, so I want to turn to some more positive conversation around best practices. And Mart, I'd love to start with you and have you share what Enterprise Estonia has done to solve some of these challenges.
Yeah, so my department there, it also offers funding. For the Death Valley, crossing the Death Valley, applied research and the initial piloting in the in an industrial setting, and there We believe that in especially if you talk about the lower technology readiness levels, you need academic or research support more and more. And therefore, the practical really is that if a university or the company, decides to collaborate with a university or research institute in Estonia or in Latvia or in the UK or US, it gets a sort of bonus for that. But that usually urges companies to go and find a collaborator from the research institute. But second, I think that you can't really push it too much, though. The company needs to be at the right level with its research project. It needs to sort of click. So, to be honest, I'm not really a fan of those tech transfer processes that people try to draw. I think what you said, going to the university and talking with people, especially in a small country like Estonia or Latvia, everybody knows everybody almost. Everybody's one or two phone calls away. It's a matter of really just doing it. You don't need a fancy process to go walk into the university research center. I do that all the time.
Right. You and I also talked about what you do, what the organization does around helping to validate kind of market viability as well. Can you spend a little bit of time there?
Yeah, so as I mentioned in the introduction, we have 10 of us that have different research and industry backgrounds. And so how the program for startups predominantly, we also fund established companies, but if you talk about startups, they come to us, pitch their idea, write a sort of a proposal for the funding. It roughly consists of the research part, which we validate in-house, and the business side, which we often validate in-house. Sometimes we bring in people from the outside to validate this business case. And then say, okay, yes, we will fund you. Provided you find, let's say, 30-40% from the private investment, from private investors. And typically, once we have validated and say, okay, we will fund you, then usually the company finds investors because A, it's roughly validated to a certain degree, and B, government puts in non-dilutive funding, so you get more, we don't take shares in the company, right? So so the investor gets a better deal, essentially, out of investing into a startup.
Okay. Alina, we talked yesterday too about the EIT and you know some best practices. Latvia is different than obviously Estonia. You've talked about the funding, but are there any other things that you can share around what you've learned to become best practices, at least in Latvia?
Yeah, I have actually a lot of positive news to share.
Great.
And one of them is I recently have read the report by Deal Room, I guess for 2023, saying that the Baltics are actually in top of attracting investments for deep tech and AI-driven innovations, like almost the second after the Nordics, which is a very good positive tendency. So we are good in attracting investment. It's just this early stage, let's say proof of concept stage is where we need a little bit more support and understanding of the situation from the government side. Another good thing in Latvia, speaking from the academia perspective, is that this year it is a historic moment when all four science universities has joined together to establish a UniLab, a university technology business incubator, specifically to have a pipeline of the research of technology that have a commercial potential, working all together in order to support those innovations coming from Latvia, and also working towards establishing a fund that could support these early testings and proof of concept testings. And one more thing is that recently some adjustments to the regulation of in the law have been moved forward to allow universities invest in the spin-offs of the universities. which also is a precedent, I believe it's a very good initiative because it sets the rule to be more proactive, supporting spin-offs and researchers, motivating them in the long run with the potential to receive back like more value for the research that is coming from the university. So we really hope that this will be approved on the national level, and this mechanism would be in place to test like how does that influence spin-offs coming from the university. But in terms of EET, we see a very positive results as well, like especially Baltics showing that this collaboration with the institute is very well recognized. We're showing great results, like supporting dozen startups in their entry to the European market, access to industry. There are such support programs as Jumpstarter, early stage competition of ideas, where you test the commercial potential. The EET connects you with the industry professionals to test whether these kind of technologies would be necessary. And you also have an opportunity to receive grant. There are also incubation and acceleration programs that are supporting the business development. And we see very good cases, examples, like our food tech, for example, startups who have received this opportunity and already are scaling to Finland, they're scaling to Poland market. So the mechanism works. It's just, again, we need to motivate more scientists to become entrepreneurs, to see this entrepreneurial journey. Yeah, definitely some support and co-funding should be there. Because once you are chosen for top 50, let's say, startups in Europe, you are through this program, you have validated the idea, you have identified the market potential, you still need the proof and test with the industry. Before you apply for the bigger funding or before you attract the VC investments, because they need to see the proof of concept working with industry.
Sure.
So someone needs to be there to support the test.
We were also talking yesterday about, you know, the challenge with talent. And I think another challenge is aligning culture, aligning capabilities with viable, you know, monetization opportunities. And I'll provide an example. So in Israel, they have become renowned for cybersecurity because so much of the government activity from the military incubates that. So it comes out of the military, and as a result, Israel is one of the biggest providers of cybersecurity solutions in the world. And Mark, we were talking about that as well. But what I'd like to do now is dive a little bit deeper, and we've touched on it. What I'd like to discuss is what are the specific roles that private industry, governments, and consortiums play to create this value chain? And maybe, Laura, we can start with you.
There is an important role for each and every of those players within the value chain. And we do see different examples how a project is being developed, either from the activities from the industry or from the investor or from the government, so different. For example, this summer a memorandum was signed between South Korean investment fund Eugene with the Latvian ecosystem, the biomedicine ecosystem, the largest hospitals, research centers, the ministries signed this memorandum to create an initiative that comes from that fund to bring those South Korean companies to do clinical trials and tests here in Latvia, thus increasing our capacity by providing that kind of service, so to say, and raising the awareness that Latvia really has this opportunity and knowledge and the necessary technology to actually do that. So, and the legislative aspect, of course, also is important. There is this government role to not to put extra burden, but make things as easy as possible. That's why we have this green corridor or fast track for if a company decides to open a subsidiary or develop some new project, then there is a procedure where, for example, building permit can be received twice as fast as in normal procedure. That's why fostering and accelerating those processes. So this is one example. Another example is, of course, how we can help those companies, those large investors that intend to invest hundreds of millions of euros here in Latvia, how we can help to really land that project in Latvia. We are always competing with other countries. So where our priorities lie, as was mentioned in the Estonian case, we have put five key areas as our focus areas within the smart specialization strategy here in Latvia. But to say frankly, five very broad areas is too much. It's not a real focus. We have to really to put our effort, because we're a small country, we cannot put our effort in all those five areas. We have to find those niches. For example, in aerospace, we have a great capabilities Dutch hydrogen-fueled company, which is intending to manufacture aircraft fueled by hydrogen, is planning to land their project in Latvia, which is billion worth of project. Another thing, the bioeconomy that has always been very strong here in Latvia. So the forestry industry and the biochemical industry, how that could be also changed when a large investor comes into. And the biomedicine, of course, we have excellent knowledge in this industry and how we can present that to the world and to really, like the Eugen from South Korea, to attract those investment funds and develop that industry. Because an investor won't come in a non-existing like area if there is no hub, so to say, or no knowledge. Don't dream that we'll have, we discussed, like every country expects to have a chip manufacturer, right? So we have to first work on the basis and work on our strong areas, and then we can talk how to work to develop those.
Sure. I mean, you have to crawl before you walk, before you run. And, you know, getting back to semiconductor in the United States, we are now making that investment because we have relied on Taiwan and other parts of the world to do that sort of thing. But Andres, so I'm assuming the University of Latvia, it's publicly funded. What's your perspective on this? Is private industry, like I went to the University of Texas at Austin, there's a lot of private industry in partnership with my university to drive innovation, to link these value chains together. Is that the case in Latvia?
You know, what I noticed is I was in one discussion where said that universities should focus on innovation. You know, that's a bit of trap. It sounds
pretty vague too, right?
You know, the research produces smart people. That should be understood, that's the key. Outcome of the research are smart people. Not all of them are suitable for entrepreneurship, which is also okay. Few only of them become entrepreneurs. This is what I see. And I think there should be kind of fine balance between what we call a fundamental research or basic research and applied research. Otherwise, it's like you take from your shelf ideas, but who is filling the shelf with ideas? That's the basic research, actually. Then that's amazing that everybody puts a goal to double economy. Of course, there is huge reserve in existing economy in intensifying or make it more productive, but without creating new economies, this will not work, you know? In country of size of ours, it's like one unicorn affects economy, I don't know. Multiple. Huge effect. So one huge investment also will turn around everything here. Yeah? Yep. We also must be careful about this. So from one side, the focus is important. It really is important. I believe in focus to the areas where really initiatives already exist. So you don't need to build something, it already exists. And exists in a good manner, like what we call ecosystem, which is actually, what is ecosystem, huh? People are talking.
Right.
There's the club.
There's collaboration.
You know, they're meeting, talking, they know each other. It's funny in this conference to find a telecom engineer who asks, what is quantum? Yeah, that's okay. And I think the one of the greatest secrets which we kept under the table in Latvia was our recently started this Innovation Fund program, which is actually an 8-year program which finances the crossing, actually, the depth value. Testing products in this pre-accelerator mode where you, like I said before. So we actually launched this one, and I expect there should be significant impact on this, because we had never a long-time program running, you know.
Mm-hmm. Sure. Vitaly, so the area that that you're a member of the board on, you know, pharma life sciences, very, very investment intensive, you know, oftentimes, you know, requiring millions or billions of euros. What is your perspective on this? And, you know, obviously, you know, you make a lot of investment, but what is the role of, you know, consortium and the government in driving this innovation value chain?
First of all, in pharmaceutical industry, normal company invest up to 10% of their turnover every year in development. We created already some here in Latvia some 12 years ago such a program, which is unique, I would say, and non-convenient for public sector. We call it Competence Center Program, where 8 industries created each competence center for financing of industrial research, usually done by company itself, if company has lab and technologist, or use scientists or use specialized companies who do research service. That's a great program we would like to continue, and we fight for it every day. But because we have a topic here about aligning of understanding of innovation between industry, public, and science, I would like to mention one idea or example how I believe could be good to align.
Perfect.
Here in Latvia, we are aware we have not enough people due to the demography, not enough child, and due to emigration to the more rich countries of our good people. We need people here because small country need manufacturing to make a product to export. That we bring money from that 8 billion people who live outside our country.
Mm-hmm.
How to do? I'm thinking, what would be innovation, adaptive innovation chain? Hey, Tesla has Optimus humanoid robot. If it really will cost $20,000, then our companies would be loved, would be interested that we have scientific advice how to use them in our factories.
Right.
Because to bring people who start at 5 o'clock packaging or some cleaning, it's very difficult in our country. Then, if it's done how to do, then would come service companies grow up who could help us to program it. 10, 15 program for each robot to do in company some things. And if it's when it's done, then Bolt could offer the robot Bolt service. You see, the chain of activities who increase our productivity and increase possibilities to more time for creative things to to plan strategically and so on. That's my idea aligning.
I love that. And you know, there's a lot of talk about generative AI. So the you know the new applications of machine learning in AI to do exactly what you describe, to improve productivity. But there is still concern that humans will be out of the loop. I don't believe that's the case, and we're still in the very early days. I mean, my focus as an analyst is on networking and security. I'm seeing some immediate benefits there. I do believe that AI could help accelerate the value chain that we've been discussing, but I think it's too early to predict that. But as we close our conversation, I'd like to kind of end on how do we ultimately measure success at the end of the day? I mean, from my perspective, it would be, are we driving job creation? Are we driving new revenue streams? Are we driving economic prosperity, you know, within Latvia or Estonia or Lithuania or any other country in the world? But maybe, Mart, we can start with you. I mean, how would you sort of judge the success criteria at the end of the day?
Some are straightforward. Productivity per employee.
Sure.
Rise in exports. Classical economic numbers, essentially, or that you get from the yearly reports. But it's difficult if you talk about government programs, for instance. Ideally, they would bring more broader effect on the ecosystem or change the company. For instance, if a new established company with, I don't know, 100 people starts to do in-house R&D for the first time, do they create a team for that? Do they start to collaborate with the researchers at some point? So is there a qualitative change in the company? And that's pretty difficult to assess. And actually, we just launched a tender for by this method or thinking in from the local universities that should basically create a method how Estonia should evaluate its programs it launches, how it should evaluate the effects. And it's not a straightforward answer, actually.
No, I don't think so.
I'll let you know in a couple of months when they're done.
Okay, I'll come back to you and ask you, Laura, sure. what do you think? What's your criteria or measurement of success?
Yeah, well, the same, like, general KPIs, the investment brought, exports increased, job places created. But then when you deep dive into those numbers, then in the end, it's really how it affects the economy itself. Okay. Is it good to bring...
Is it GDP focused or...?
Productivity per person,
okay.
per people increase. Because is it good to bring an ICT company like GBS Center, the call center?
Sure.
Job places created, quite high salaries paid. Is it good or...
Is it high skilled, right?
Yeah, or in several years that company closes the laptops and goes to some country where the salaries is much lower. So
in the
long term effect. And again, by attracting some metalworking company, which within the company in several years puts also the R&D capacity and produces more and more complex products. Maybe that company in the end brings more added value to the economy than this call center.
Sure.
So it's always the devil is in the details, and we have to look in the long-term perspective, not short-term.
I agree. Alina, what are your thoughts?
Yeah, I agree with what have mentioned, what have been already mentioned. Maybe from my perspective, I would just add that it could also be valuable to take a look on how much of EU funding have been utilized. Like I see that still there are opportunities that are underused, let's say in terms of commercializing the research, which have already been funded.
Sure.
Yeah, in terms of deep tech and spin-off creation, like we have, I believe that Unilab incubator has set a pretty ambitious goal to have a first unicorn coming from the academia ecosystem. So yeah, and we believe that it could set success story, motivation that we can do it, and there could be science-backed innovations bringing back to Latvia affecting all the results that have been mentioned already.
Sure.
But also one more point is that you have, before you have mentioned the Israel case.
Right.
And we have close collaboration with the EAT hub in Israel, often exchanging the experiences, learning how to work with the innovation ecosystem.
Mm-hmm.
And what I have taken from there, and I strongly believe in that approach, that how do they perceive innovations? And when they call for innovation community to work together, they believe this is a necessity. It is not something as good to have. And still in Latvia, sometimes it is a feeling that to innovate is something good to have.
Sure.
Like we are running the accelerators, we are motivating for startups, we are setting hackathons and all these innovation activities. And still, yeah, with such a, let's say, approach that it is something that would be nice.
Right.
In Israel, if they are calling for innovation activity and mobilizing ecosystem, it mm-hmm. is because there is a necessity
right.
for security,
exactly.
for particular things to survive and to increase the well-being of people mm-hmm. who are doing that.
Yep.
And I believe this is something that we could learn, identifying yep. the priorities and the necessities
yeah.
and calling out the ecosystem when it's the action is needed. Like mm-hmm. it is no... currently, it is not good to have. It's
yeah,
must have.
Yeah, I mean, it's aligning. Again, it gets back to the point that I made earlier, aligning culture to what's important, you know, and that's going to vary by country, right? So Vitaly, I'm assuming, you know, in pharma, the measurement is obviously, you know, curing disease, better patient outcomes, and ultimately revenue at the end of the day. But are there other barometers of success that you think about?
Specifically for Latvia, I would say that would be good one KPI establish and then motivate that this KPI is achieved by scientists and enterprises. That means scientists full-time equivalent and how it's attracted or private money.
Mm-hmm.
That how it's stick together and that this set would have be promoted, I would say. Then it's good.
Yeah.
Bring us closer to the talk and understanding of two universes where in the surface where they connect, the new things would come up.
Mm-hmm. And Andres, from a research perspective, what's your KPI?
I think one of the KPIs is that we are deeply integrated into European research area, that people are working in our institute from the rest of the Europe, and our researchers go to other institutes in whole Europe. The same is like students from university, they really travel a lot, and there are many foreign students in our university. I would say that would be quite nice. From economy, I always wonder people creating new workplaces where you have already shortage of workers, I would say maybe do the same with less workplaces can be the better indicator in some case. So
do more with less, right?
Yeah. So it's but the robots, I think they will be also in the research labs.
Yeah.
That's for sure, because there is no other way to do in modern times.
Sure.
Yeah, but the rest is like the guys said, and I think that everything will be fine. If we really have these talking ecosystems, like and any industry knows how to talk to research, and researchers have no barriers and understands how to talk to industry about the benchmarks of their achievements.
It's ultimately about collaboration and just making the effort to have that conducted more frequently. So thank you to all of my panelists. It's been a great conversation. And let's open it up to Q&A, my friend.
Yep. All right, your question, please. And we won't move until there will no be questions.
Yeah.
One question, just one.
So, we are talking about the ecosystem. And I would have one question to next year. This ecosystem and this opportunity would be called just Techritory. Yeah,
that's right.
No more 5G Techritory, it's the Techritory.
Yeah.
So what should be the thing we would be discussing at this panel next year?
Merging different things together, which is called interdisciplinarity.
Merging different things. Like, we talked about this, how that could be done, but then it should be already talks about who does what, right?
For sure. Yeah, I would agree with that. I mean, when, you know, I look at technology, you know, networking, security, telecommunications, it's about convergence, right? And so I think Techritory rebranding itself, and it's all about the tech stack and bringing that all together. And, you know, the end result is greater than the sum of the parts.
All right. Anything else to add? So, yes?
Next year, I hope that we will talk about microcosmos of joining together biopharmacy or cells with sensors and electronics. Yes.
Wow,
wow.
Some round of applause to that ambition. Thank you very much.
All
thank
right.
you, the panel. And thank you, moderator Will Townsend.